here we go. The wooden wagon. Here comes wooden wagon. Wooden wagon doesn't care about snow. Wooden wagon doesn't care about ice. The wooden wagon. Horses pull the wooden wagon all the time. Here it comes right now. I said, here. Oh, there it is. And guess who's in it?
Ray Wingo.
Just shut up.
Okay.
If you don't want to watch, then don't watch. Go watch the Raptors and the Knicks. Go do something else.
Yeah.
But don't sit there for four flipping hours with your eyes glued to the game and say, oh, this is so boring. If you don't want to watch it, then don't watch it.
Right.
But don't watch the game and sit there and go, oh, I hate it.
Understand?
That's the worst.
I really feel sorry for the teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar, because whoever's sitting in the wagon, just sitting there, like, so angry.
Angry,
but she, you know, do you notice how she's, like, gets back, like, right? She helps them, and I understand.
But it's hurting her. It's going to shorten her lifespan, I suspect.
Because all that negativity, everybody yelling at her.
Got it. You got to stop this sequence.
Very therapeutic.
Yes,
for them,
everybody
for
else,
them, but not the little lady. All right,
maybe she started off a bigger lady.
She's in a pickle jar. We got to make those holes in the top of the jar a little smaller.
More air.
Let's see. A sheriff was sitting. Where does the sheriff sit there in the San Juan courts? That there's a camera in front.
It's not in the courts.
Where
it's
was
actually
he?
At the sheriff's dispatch office. That's what they claim.
No, that's even better.
Yeah. No.
So he's sitting at the dispatch office. So I guess they've got a camera in the courtroom in case something goes wrong, right?
Exactly. It's
and
a security camera.
It's a security camera.
Yeah.
But you can zoom in with those.
Well, apparently he didn't realize this. Son of a gun, if he doesn't have a camera in the courtroom. Now, he claims that he was zooming in and doing all these various things because he was concerned about security. Now, the guy who's being charged, it was up for a misdemeanor. That's all it was. I mean, I think he threatened to stab at somebody or something. But the idea is that it was not like this was a long time hardened criminal that they. So I think the idea that he needed to make sure that security was good in this particular case seems a little suspect. But if we believe him at his face value, he says, "I was just checking out the equipment to make sure that it was working."
Yeah.
And what he did was he used the camera to not only position himself behind the defense table, but he then zoomed in, and he claims he didn't even know it had a zoom. Son of a gun, if it's zooming without his control, zooming in on the notes on the defense attorneys to see what she had written down.
Yeah.
And then it went over and zoomed in on some of the notes being
inadvertently,
taken by the juror.
Inadvertently.
How convenient.
Your Honor, my client had no idea what that button did.
Well, people were flabbergasted, and as soon as this came to light, the judge threw out the case.
Yes.
He says, this is ridiculous. This is not allowed in a court of law.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically the story.
Okay.
The weird thing, though, is how did this come to be noticed? Well, it turns out the regular sitting judge, a woman named, I think, Loring, she was working on other matters, so they had a fill-in judge at the time doing the case. So the regular judge happened to be at the court reporter or the court operator's desk checking on a schedule of something, and there are two computer screens. One's a computer.
Yeah,
and so this judge saw the computer on the other computer at this woman's desk that it was zooming in on the defense table and said, wait a minute, what is this?
Yeah.
And called it to the attention of the fill-in judge, and the judge then asked to look at it, and they said, that's outrageous. They are debating whether they're going to reveal the tape or not. The argument against showing the tape, making the tape public, is that it might reveal security issues at the court.
Crazy.
But the one thing that's a little disturbing about San Juan County, not the prosecutor's office, but the sheriff's department, is
you're
not
only a sexual assault thing.
They already were in trouble. This was 2 years ago in 2016, where this same particular judge happened to be advising, been sitting in as a Superior Court judge. A high school teacher had been accused of having sex with a student, and they had to throw that case out when it was revealed that the sheriff's detective on the case was having sex with the victim as well.
Sam.
And so it's like San Juan County Sheriff's Office needs to get its house in order, or they're going to be letting criminals run free.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. Felix coming back on that. Liam Neeson, of course, a great big actor. He's an Irish guy, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
He describes the fact that he had a friend of his. Does he explain most of it in this piece, or do I need to set it all up?
Yeah, I mean, in the interview, he did.
Told the weird story. Okay, here he is.
I'll tell you a story. This is true. I'm not going to use any names, but I was away and I came back. And she told me she had been raped. but she handled the situation of the rape in the most extraordinary way. But my immediate reaction was, I asked, did she know who it was? No. What color were they? She said it was a black person. I went up and down areas with a kosh.
With a what? Like a bar or something. Something hit somebody with, right?
Club. Yeah.
I'd
club.
Be approached by somebody. I'm ashamed to say that.
I mean, I interrupted him. He was walking with a club, hoping in a black area, hoping to be approached by somebody.
And I did it for maybe a week, hoping some black would come out of a pub and have a go at me about something, you know, so that I could kill him.
Wow. Crazy. He says he feels terrible, and he's learned something from it.
It was horrible, horrible when I think back, but I did that. And I've never admitted that to it. I'm saying it to a journalist. God forbid. Holy it's awful. But I did learn a lesson from it when I eventually thought, what the f*** are you doing, you know? Mm.
Yeah, so he reveals this, and he feels terrible about it. And I guess he's just saying the depths that a human being will go to for revenge. That he was hoping somebody would kind of give him a hard time so he could kill the guy.
So he'd have justification.
Yep. That's a good I think the other thing he's going to learn is you can't do that because it apparently makes you racist. Here's on Good Morning America.
You know, the topic of her film is revenge. And it's a dark comedy, too, but it's based as revenge.
Imagine that. A Liam Neeson movie about revenge.
It's called Cold Pursuit.
It's really going way outside of his comfort
zone. Looks like a ripoff of Taken 7.
Revenge. And the lady journalist was asking me, how do you tap into that?
Lady journalist.
And I remembered an incident nearly 40 years ago where a very dear friend of mine was brutally raped. But I had never felt this feeling before, which was a primal urge to lash out.
So he's explaining his motivation, right? That's what it is.
I did seek help. I went to a priest. I heard my confession, and I was reared a Catholic. I had two very, very good friends that I talked to. And believe it or not, power walking.
What did?
Power walking.
Power walking. The power blogging.
Blogging. That's what it sounded like to me, but I'd read the power script walking. Beforehand. So.
Yeah, 2 hours every day.
You can
to get rid of.
Oh, you put the word power in front of something, it makes it seem like it's. He walked.
He basically. He strolled. Yeah. He ambled.
He's power snacking.
He's a flatterer.
I'm not racist. This was nearly 40 years ago, but because I was brought up in. Maybe I'm rabbiting on, Rob, so forgive me. No. I was brought up in the north of Ireland and brought up in the Troubles, the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. The bigotry. One Catholic would be killed. The next day, a Protestant would be killed. One Catholic pub would be bombed. A Protestant pub would be bombed. I grew up surrounded by that.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's been huge blowback on this. Yeah, sure. Accusing him of being a racist. So
it's not racist.
I think the idea here is, what if it had turned out that the guy who raped this friend of his
was
white, or because there are a lot of white people in Ireland. No, what if it was a Protestant? Would he have then gone to Protestant areas to beat a Protestant to death and all this? And so the only question is, why would he ask the color as opposed to other aspects?
Maybe he asked other things as well.
Yes, and it just didn't come to
maybe
light.
Maybe this is where he edited it.
But this is one of those things. I think it makes perfect sense. You go to your priest. I get that. He's Catholic. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of things you confess maybe to your therapist. Mm-hmm. But it is a little dicey to then bring it out into the
Well, I think he probably looks at the amount of time that's passed, and he's got control of it, and he explains it.
Yeah.
When I got mugged with Schmitty, my friend Schmitty in Philadelphia at 30th Street Station, the four guys jumped us, and Schmitty got the worst of it. The guy uppercutted him with a bear claw ring, a turquoise bear claw ring, and it split his nose like Jack Nicholson in Chinatown.
Yeah,
they stuck the knife in there and pulled it. It looked like that. So the whole left side of his nose is just open, and I mean it is gushing blood.
Yeah.
I got punched in the side of the head. I was a little wacky out of it, but I didn't get any little egg there. But
no physical
upstairs. No physical damage. We walk upstairs to the second floor at 30th Street Station, and it is bustling. It's like 9 o'clock at night, and Schmitty is screaming the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, Schmitty, this is not probably the best thing. But what he wanted was he wanted someone else to come up to him and tell him to stop it so that he could take all that rage and just go nuts on somebody.
I think it makes perfect psychological sense. The question is, do we live in a world where these kinds of confessions belong for public consumption? Because it could be seen as giving credence to those feelings or justification for killing all this. I mean, basically, he's admitting a deep, dark secret that he's ashamed of.
But it's not racist. If the woman had been raped by a white guy or an Indian or whatever, he would have gone out and looked for that person. He was trying to get some sort of justice.
He wasn't going after the rapist. He was going after the same race of the
rapist. Of the rapist.
And that's
what
makes it a little dicier.
Possibly could have gone after the white guy as well. But anyway, he's probably going to have to, I guess, not be able to get movies, or will he have to do a public apology, or something will have to come up, right?
Because I don't know. And I don't know if the audience for his kind of movies are going to be bothered by, you know, the blowback anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Gerard Depardieu is a big French actor, and he admitted that he took part in a gang rape when he was in his teens, and that did not sit well with the French public when he went public, because he was kind of justifying it. You know how guys, you know, that's the kind of thing we did, but it was an acknowledgement of the rough background that he grew up in, much like the Troubles, as Liam Neeson says here.
Let's see. Howard Schultz was being interviewed, and he says there's a problem. The word billionaires has become a bad word.
Do you agree that billionaires have too much power in American public life?
The moniker billionaire now has become the catchphrase. I would rephrase that, and I would say that people of means have been able to leverage their wealth and their interest in ways that are unfair. And I think that speaks to the inequality, but it also directly speaks to the special interests that are paid for by people of wealth and corporations who are looking for influence. And they have such unbelievable influence on the politicians who are steeped in the ideology of both parties.
Yeah, he's actually quoting from a piece from a Villanova, University of Villanova economics professor who's also with Columbia. They did a study on billionaires. He says, specifically, when billionaires get their wealth because of political connections, the wealth inequality tends to drag on the broader economy. The study also finds that billionaires, when they get their wealth through markets, through business activities that are not related to the government, it does not. So the idea of you use all your wealth to influence elected officials so that they kick more money or more restrictions or more, you know, sort of tariffs on top of your competition, you'll do better. But just generally, if a billionaire doesn't necessarily be a bad thing. But that seems what Howard Schultz is trying to make that distinction.
I don't think he's making that distinction at all. I think he's objecting to the fact that we've now villainized the word billionaires, so he wants to be called people of means, which I think is nuts.
No. What he's saying is that there's two parts to his argument. One is, don't call it billionaire. It's people of means using their influence to affect their business and use their connections. That creates the inequality.
To leverage their wealth and their interests in ways that are unfair.
Unfair, which That's means right. unfair occurs when the government gets in and picks a winner over a loser.
Well, first off, he doesn't say that.
He did.
It says, and I think that speaks
political
to
the connections.
Inequality. But it also directs. Yeah, I know. And then it also has a political consequence. No, I think he acknowledges that billionaires have an undue influence on society because
not
of their
society.
Wealth.
Not society.
And that's
not society.
They wealth. Yes, John.
They
I don't
do
know
not.
Why,
Tom,
why
Tom,
are you throwing
explain
that
to me.
Into the speech?
Explain to me.
No, John.
Explain to me how billionaire
how
has an effect of an yes. unfair effect upon society.
It leverages their wealth and their interests in ways that are unfair. What we're saying is that's what he says as a person of
unfair
means.
Unfair to whom?
Yeah. Well, so you ask him. He's the one that's saying that.
He's talking about the unfair. He's referring to when you get and you use political connections.
No.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, first off, it's almost impossible not to have political connections. But he says, but it also, and then he goes into the idea of special interests for corporations that are paid for by people of wealth and corporations who are looking for influence.
Yeah.
So he takes them both. But the
government.
The only reason we're doing this is from the discussion 3 days
but
ago.
But I don't even think it's that bad of a deal that he uses people of means.
People of means.
He's
Why?
Just trying to redefine the conversation.
Exactly. Right. And I think that's interesting that a billionaire is afraid of accepting the fact that he's a billionaire.
I don't think he's afraid of it. I think he's been so
moniker
vilified.
Billionaire has become the catchphrase.
So
yes.
I looked up, because we had this people round and round yesterday on it about how billionaires are bad. So I looked up Elon Musk. Was the guy that came in 1999. Just to give you some idea, because billionaires take their money and the economy doesn't benefit. Elon Musk gets in at PayPal. Then Elon Musk leaves PayPal. By the way, he employs 18,000 people at PayPal. Then he starts Tesla, employs 40,000. Then he starts SpaceX. Awesome. Yeah. He employs 6,000 because this is how his money works. Then he starts the Hyperloop. He employs 280 people. Then he starts the Boring Company and employs 2,000 people. Altogether, Elon Musk started at PayPal, took his billions and billions of dollars, and has now created 66,321 jobs. And to think that each one of those jobs averages $90,000 is pretty amazing. So yes. Elon Musk becomes a billionaire, and then Elon Musk starts all of these other businesses, which then create all this wealth. Now, do you want to take that money from Elon Musk? Do you want to raise capital gains so he can't create those businesses? That's why the argument is a billionaire creates jobs with his money because a billionaire wants to make more money.
I know, John. And this is the same argument that guy had yesterday in the article. He made that billion with the help of the billions of us that make up this economy. And the idea here is that he couldn't have done that without the societal advantages. You mentioned that Howard Schultz mentioned he grew up in public housing in Brooklyn. He could not, or the Bronx, he could not have done that if he didn't have government help to get him, you know, through his childhood, his impoverished childhood, and through college.
He paid
and all
his
that,
taxes.
That people benefit from
the reason
that.
The person
and
became
so that's
a billionaire.
Why there's no such thing as a self-made man.
Tom, the reason Howard Schultz is a billionaire because he convinced you to pay $5 for a cup of coffee.
He could not have convinced me if he hadn't had the means to do that in public housing that we, the taxpayers, paid for.
Right.
The idea is he got a hand up, and now he's helping others. And the idea is that you don't discourage all entrepreneurship.
No,
you just some
of it.
That's right, because he owes it. So for the
he
owes it because we gave it to him to get started. If you lend somebody, if you gave $100 to a person, yes, you did. Mm-mm. What we did is we created a society to allow for that. And who was the other? There were two examples of people that started, you know, with nothing, and they were on public assistance.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't Mark Zuckerberg. It was somebody, one of these guys who made
a
fortune.
Jeff Bezos, 16-year-old
Jeff Bezos,
mom.
That's right. Yeah. Jeff Bezos. And the idea is that we as a society create a climate and a situation where we all pay taxes to allow for this encouragement, and we don't rob them of their billions. We encourage them, but the idea is that they then owe something back to society, and that's why there's no such thing as a purely self-made man. That's all they're saying.
Well,
there's more income inequality because on the backs of the individual workers who are getting paid minimum wage, these people are all making money.
They're making minimum wage because they got minimum skills. That's the difference. And most people have minimum wage jobs for no more than 18 months, and they either get more money or they get out. And 50% of people who have minimum wage jobs are in high school or college and are working part-time.
That's right.
That's the fact. So the thing is
that
Howard
is that Elon Musk and
let Elon Musk keep his money and Elon Musk creates more jobs.
No,
you take
70%
from Elon Musk. It doesn't create inequality. Inequality is natural,
Tom.
No,
I know, but the thing is, John, there were 32 billionaires in like something like 1982,
right?
And now there are 1,000.
Right.
It's like,
and look how great the economy is.
The economy is not doing great. Most people are not getting more money. That's the incredible thing. It's more income inequality now than ever, and that's what they say. Suddenly, billionaires are no longer popular.
Uh-huh.
The Bernie Sanders of the world are actually turning us on onto this.
Right. Let's do what they did in Venezuela. It works well there, where everyone's equal.
Let's do what we did in this country in the 50s and 60s and 70s. You just tax 70% for the people that are making more than $5 billion.
They didn't pay it, so you wouldn't make it. We'll be right back. Hey, same argument we had yesterday. Did we get anywhere?
Exactly.
Did we get anywhere?
I noticed you completely stirred.
No,
Joy
I just
with that story.
He says there's
to
a
get
problem.
Him off this.
Well,
he
what
doesn't
are we gonna
say,
say
that.
That
you're going to say. You took Howard Schultz's statement, and what you did is said, oh, well, you know, he's really referencing this other article
he
looked up overnight to throw at you, and it was
No, I wanted to see where he came, that idea of
that's
influence
right,
in billionaires, and that's what he came up with.
That's
good. By the way, you know who's going to write in now? Eric and Bothell.
Yeah, that's right. Didn't you read his letter of the day yesterday,
He's probably
John?
Sitting down at a
Listen
computer
up.
That was created by a billionaire. We'll be right back.
With our help, the peons of the world.
Online Trade Academy text line, 989-73. 989-73, great way to get in touch with the show. Thanks, everybody, for coming on in. All righty. Here it is, Tuesday. Is the snow supposed to come on Friday morning? Friday night. Oh, shit.
Right. Later in the day.
Darn it.
Why?
Well, because if it came in the morning, then I'd have then it would be like, oh, you know, Curly's not here.
You came in yesterday. It was
No. Yeah, no, but when the snow went like that, people aren't listening. Right? I'm just trying to soften the blow for the fact that I'm not going to be here on Friday.
Oh! Yeah. That's
what I'm doing. We'll survive.
That's right. Okay. See that right there? That's it.
Ah.
I told Tom, John's this bragging. Is for the Grammy Awards thing, for the event on Friday. I get to go backstage where I can enjoy free drinks and food, and there will also be a watch for me, jewelry, resort stays.
A swag bag.
Swag bag.
Well, are we going to get anything out of this?
I'm like, bringing it in so everybody gets a look at it. And I'll tell you what, we'll blindfold everybody. And you can reach in and take out whatever you'd like out of the swag bag.
How about you do live reports, backstage reports?
See that? That's pretty kooky crazy. Anyway, so a bunch of stars are going to be there, and I'll be back there. Maybe, you know, a lot of the stars don't want the extra swag bag. I'll take it. You get a bull of a watch.
Yeah, watches, I think they said plural.
But how many of them can you use, right?
Right, absolutely. Good point, Ursula. Thanks for bringing me back down. Ruining the whole thing.
See, too many yachts.
Buzzkill, right. Too many yachts determined by the government.
We are the government.
Not really.
Yes.
That's right. Let's round up all the Japanese that have been in internment camps. Hey, every time you turn around, there's somebody else trying to tell you about breakfast. And then you're supposed to eat it, not eat it. If you don't eat it, then it throws your body into a state where now all of a sudden everything you do eat, if you go for like fasting for more than 12 hours, your body consumes the calories and stores it as fat. There seems to be so much back and forth on this that now finally somebody, is this going to be the final word on it, Tom? No more?
Yes.
No more breakfast.
Until we hear from the cereal industry.
Now, class, Mr. Tiger will show us how Kellogg's Sugar Frosted Flakes cereal starts out.
Just a flake field?
It's a cornfield. Kellogg's toast corn to golden flakes and adds a secret frosting. Helps keep them extra crunchy and delicious. It's part of your good breakfast and tastes.
I know.
Sit down, breakfast with Tony, and you'll discover why it's
great. There you go. They add special stuff to their golden flakes. They sandblast them in sugar.
So for the longest time, you say it keeps going back and forth. There are definitely arguments about diet, but in general, they always say the most important meal is your breakfast because it starts you off on a good foot. So Vox has now come and looked at all of these various analyses of eating breakfast, and it says that it turns out that that might be true, but there's certainly no scientific proof for it. All the studies that have been established that say that have been paid for part and parcel by the cereal industry. And they say that if you lose weight and you eat a breakfast, could be seen as a good thing. But they say that's correlation without causation. Whenever they do actual real studies of that, they have all these arguments. There's no effect or there's no evidence for this or that, that it doesn't matter. If you want to eat, you can eat. But if you eat and you don't feel like it, you end up gaining weight.
Uh-huh.
This is what happens to me. I naturally don't eat breakfast if I was left to my own, you know, preferences. But I force myself to eat because I figure, okay, that's supposed to be good for me. Well, he said, no, actually, if you're predisposed not to like breakfast, there's no point in eating breakfast because then you'll just eat that in addition to what you normally would eat. So at the end of this whole study, this article says it really doesn't matter whether you eat breakfast or not. In fact, they cite a longtime breakfast skipper who's also a nutrition researcher, and he says it's not when you eat, it's what you eat.
Uh-huh.
The idea is if you eat vegetables and fruits, you balance your calories, you know, you don't eat a lot of junk food, you're better off. If you want to eat that at noon and 4 and 10 o'clock at night, that's okay. Uh-huh. The idea is what you eat and not when you eat. And so basically, I love cereal, but they sort of banish cereals.
Wait, you're telling me that you're telling me breakfast is not important. Stop it. Will you stop, stupid computer?
Eating at breakfast time is not what's crucial if you want to lose weight.
Oh, just for dieting. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the presentation here. It's more important what you eat, not when you eat it.
Got it. When it comes to eating, vegetarians seem to be having their moments, and perhaps it has arrived for them, that more and more prominent Americans that can afford to live this way see the environmental benefits and the health stakes as well. So they've listed a whole bunch of celebrities that eat only plant-based foods.
Yes, it's not vegetarianism, it's veganism that's suddenly having its moment, as they mentioned, the booming plant-based trend, and they cite various people. For instance, we just had Cory Booker announced for president. Apparently, he's been on a plant-based diet for, I don't know how long, a few years. Serena Williams, animal production product consumption, she's trying to cut it out. completely. You've got Beyonce and Jay-Z doing the same thing and also offering a 30-year supply of concert tickets for one lucky fan who vows to ditch animal products. And this is not just eating them. There's actually a movement afoot to try to not use animals, at least as much as possible, in things like clothing, any kind of animal agriculture they claim is one of the planet's greatest threats.
Mm-hmm.
There's this kind of whole vegan rhetoric that's taking hold, and it's becoming more mainstream. It used to be way out in the fringe. Now it's becoming more mainstream.
Yeah, I saw an article called Veganism is a rich man's game. That yeah. people that are in it, if you really want to go all in it, you can support your life by eating that type of food, but it's not necessarily cheap. You ever bought a bunch of vegetables at the supermarket and then go to make a juice out of it? It's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm driving all these carrots in there and the beet juice. It's unbelievably healthy. And then, I get a nice big glass of it. I realize I've gone through like $12.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting the organic stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting the organic stuff, but I'm scanning it myself and saying it's non-organic.
Cheater.
By the way, Carl's Jr.
Apparently has a new meat-free burger that they've advertised during the Super Bowl. I didn't notice that. But this is the way of the world. Miley Cyrus and Joaquin Phoenix. There are two approaches to this.
Uh-huh.
One is it's good for the environment, and one is it's good for you personally. So Serena Williams thinks this is better a health issue, and people like Beyonce and Jay-Z see it as contributing to greenhouse gas emissions, deforestation, ocean degradation, and freshwater pollution.
Right. Then they get in their gigantic jet or their huge houses all around the world,
and then
they save the world. Right. By the way, it's a local burger place. Fat Burger's got a thing called the Impossible Burger. It's really good.
It looks just like it.
Tastes just really good.
Is it more expensive than a regular hamburger or about the same?
It's about the same, right?
Yeah.
I think it might be a couple dollars more, but pretty close.
A couple dollars for a burger? That's a lot.
The Fat Burger is not cheap.
Well, I know, but if it's a couple dollars more, what is it? $8 and $10?
Something like that.
Okay.
By the way, if you were to eat one of their triple burgers and eat it in a certain amount of time, would you want your name up on that wall? That's what they have a big thing. Oh, I ate the triple burger in like 54 seconds or something.
Right?
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't gone in there.
Bus doesn't stop by Fat Burger.
I have to seek it out, I guess. I got to get my name up there. As long as yours is up there, it's got to be Tom and Curly.
Right back. Care Partners Senior Living, thanks a lot. We appreciate the fact that you do sponsor the Tom and Curly show, especially when it comes to the letters, which is our favorite part of the show. So then that would make you, Care Partners Senior Living, our favorite sponsor. See how that works, Tom?
They're the best.
There we are. Here comes the mailman now.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Right to your door. Teeny tiny lady, how you doing over there? Sorry about you having to deal with a guy screaming at you all the time.
Hello!
She doesn't seem to care. Stays positive. We'll get to that letter of the day.
Resilient.
Let's get started. Tommy.
253, we're talking about the snow off the top of the show. Yeah, the weather dude. Where's he been?
Yeah, where has he been? Jacob, drop the ball on that.
I don't know the answer.
425, as a Chicago area born and raised person, I'll say the big difference from there and here is the hilly terrain, major bummer.
Yep. From Curly Boy.
Oh.
Gents. I'd like you to know that while all the other snowbound kids are playing Fortnite, your dedicated 16-year-old listener is still here.
Oh, wow. Love that guy. All right, 207, I'm from Maine. I now live in Seattle. The idea the Northeast gets mostly fluffy snow is false. We constantly get periods of wet snow and then ice. Right now, there is a snow-ice mix in Maine. However, we put salt on the road so people can drive, and then their car falls apart in 8 years.
Ghost in the Closet story, 360. Yes. We had a burglary where they entered the residence several times and stole items. There was no sign of forced entry. Locks were changed several times. They either had lock-picking experience or a bump key. Look up bump key on the internet. They'll open most residential locks and are readily available online, along with videos on how to use them.
Let's see, when it comes to the John sighting. Wow, there's a John sighting. I saw John at the finish line at the Tacoma, or the tunnel, Viaduct 8K on Sunday. I rudely interrupted. You were talking to other groupies. And I said, I like the show. You were very gracious, and you sucked back your nun. That's a drink that you put, little tablet you put some electrolytes. Keep telling your ridiculous stories and keep giving it to Tom. All right, thank you.
on the Senate.
By the way,
Union.
He was a young guy.
He was a young
he
guy.
He was young, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have a 16-year-old following us, too.
I'm telling you.
360, Tom would like to rewrite history, but the resistors were marching in Olympia the Tuesday night of the election, yelling and screaming, as well they should. Mm-hmm. Not one Democrat was ever going to work with Trump, and Tom knows it.
And Michael in Seattle says, John, the night of Obama's inauguration, Newt Gingrich gathered together in Washington, D.C. steakhouse with Republican senators and representatives, and they agreed to a plan to vote on nothing Obama and the Democrats wanted, even if it was an issue that the Republicans had considered before. They agreed to deny Obama any legislative wins from day one.
See, they're both bad. On the John Curley Pizza, Larry in West Seattle. Now Curley's Pizza can be described as plenty of ham, cheese, and cheap.
It's not
because of the because you didn't tip. That's
good one. Let's see. Liam Neeson, CB in 253. The Liam Neeson story brings up an interesting question. At what point does revenge become okay? Is revenge always justified? Never, or somewhere in between?
Aha. Uh-huh. And Mr. 253, who knew you could just power walk away your racist tendencies / murderous intent? Get Starbucks on the phone. We're closing for unconscious bias training.
253, if Liam Neeson fan, I don't care. Just show that he's human and isn't afraid to admit his past sins.
On the wagon passenger, 253, the little lady needs to occasionally take a ride with someone less angry and negative. Say a yogi, some gentle talking wise men. How about Fred Rogers?
Mm.
Just a thought, neighbor.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Dead cryptocurrency guy. 707 says, John, my second husband had a PhD from Johns Hopkins and worked for Coca-Cola. Then Pepsi recruited him during the Joan Crawford times. He never drank the cola's garbage. Did you get all that? Did I miss words?
Yeah. That's right. The idea is that he profited from it, but he never partook.
Still lost. Going on.
On the HOV lane violators, 360, yes. This is the anti-Curley bill. It's a big political takedown.
David in Evanston says they justify HOV lanes as reducing traffic. But when the Alaska Way Viaduct went down, what did they do with the HOV lanes? Oh, that's right. They opened them to all. Where did extra traffic go? Lots of speculation, but HOV opening swallowed a lot.
On the billionaires, Rob in Anderson Island, I don't think Tom understands our economy. I'm a school bus driver. I got a $4 raise this year because of how well the economy is doing. Mm-hmm. Oh, and that means we don't get to Eric and Bothell.
Oh, claims, no, I
don't hate billionaires, but...
he goes on and on and on. Time for the letter of the day.
But, of course, we need to hear from a guy who's recovering from his festivities yesterday and the day before, Andy, on the road less traveled.
Mm-hmm.
I hope, fellas, and happy friggin' hump day eve. Well, fellas, as promised, I'm writing to possibly take my lumps. But as fate would have it, the mighty New England Patriots managed to pull out a win in a big game snooze-a-thon. And the national anthem, which was in all fairness not bad, and I'm being kind here, absolutely abysmal halftime show, and a lack of offense across the board, it was a dullard for the ages. Even the commercials were tepid at best, but when the dust settled, Brady and Belichick cemented their places in history, so that's something. Have a great rest of the week, fellas, and remember, no matter where you go, there you are. A classic. Yeah, good luck.
Luck with what?
MVP cheater.
Out of time. Bye-bye.